You are listening to For the Record. It's a registrar podcast sponsored by ACRO. I am Dr. Susan Crissy, and this is Working Effectively with Faculty.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of For the Record, a registrar podcast sponsored by ACRO. I'm your host, Doug McKenna, and today we're going to talk about a sensitive topic that each of us has to deal with in our day-to-day lives. It's a topic about relationships that can be fraught at times, but which can also bring a great sense of satisfaction. We're going to talk about the F word. That's right. It's time to talk about faculty. Joining me today is Dr. Susan Crissy, who literally wrote the book on faculty-staff relationships titled Working Effectively with Faculty, Guidebook to Higher Education Staff and Managers. Dr. Crissy, Susan, if I may, welcome to the podcast and thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having me. And isn't it surprising that there isn't more productive conversation about who faculty are and how to work with them?
Before we dive into the topic of the day, would you tell us a little bit about yourself? You were a tenured psychology professor before transitioning to your current role as an educational consultant. Would you tell us about that transition and what inspired you to explore the faculty-staff relationship within higher education?
Sure, Doug. I loved being a tenured psychology professor. I was in a community college and very interested in applying the psychological research to help students to improve in their personal, family, and work life, particularly interested in human relationships. I created programs in the psychology of personality, psychology of the family, and psychology of women and men. I also had a weekly TV show on working with the disabled. So I had a sabbatical several years into teaching, and some people learned about my work there in San Francisco and recruited me into a small company that designed and delivered people skills training for big corporations. So this was very interesting to me. I learned about the corporate world. When this little company promoted me to vice president, I didn't like that so much. So I started my own little company working. Yeah, you can understand. Yeah. I think they call that the Peter Principle. I was never totally comfortable working in corporations, but UCSF heard about me and invited me to speak to their whole HR department on the topic, how to work with difficult people. Well, they loved it. They hired me to do trainings there through HR, and I consulted with dozens of departments and very much enjoyed it. The word got around, and I was working with dozens of colleges and universities all around California and the West Coast. When I was having lunch one day with the director of training at Stanford, she said they have wonderful trainers. And of course they did, because they paid more than anywhere else. But those trainers don't understand the academic world. They don't understand the faculty. And I said, well, I think I do understand. I'll see what I can do. I read everything I could find. I designed a pilot. Staff members at Stanford signed up in droves, and it just led to my training other places, my writing this book. And I'd like to tell you, it has been my privilege to work with administrators, with staff, and with faculty in over 100 colleges and universities across the country. Wow. At every level. So I am learning from people like you, Doug, and other registrars.
Thanks. We are going to cover a bunch of ground today on the faculty-staff relationships, but I think it's important to start off with an understanding of who the faculty are, what their incentive structure is, why it might seem like faculty and administrators are worlds apart. And you mentioned understanding that to an extent and building some trainings around that. So would you give us some background?
I'd be glad to. A little concerned, I have a lot of material, but people have found it helpful. I'll motor right through it. Let's think of faculty as academics. They are a group of people who have a different background, outlook, methods, and culture than registrars, administrators, and staff. There's a faculty side of the academic house and a staff side of the academic house. So these academics were stars in high school. They excelled in college. They went to graduate school and were probably the best of the best and were encouraged to become faculty members. All along, they had to compete for grades and for the best faculty recommendations. And you know what? They applied to your college or university to be a faculty member. Again, competing and winning. The best of them wanted to be on the tenure track. I'll say a little more about that in a minute, but rank is very important. So how are faculty members successful? On the tenure track, we've all heard of publish or perish, and it means to get the best grants, the biggest grants, to be published in the peer-reviewed best journals. Nature and Science are the best. And it's interesting, when they get promoted or voted in for tenure, it's by their peers. In other words, they'd be associate professors for 7 years. And then if they make tenure, they're voted in by other tenured faculty members. So notice how they have to be competent and confident all the way along. They're not very good at saying they don't know, at looking vulnerable, because they need to be stars.
Got it.
They're internally motivated. Yeah. So it's very interesting because they're hard on themselves. They work hard and they're hard on other people. Staff tell me at all levels, faculty can be demanding, can be critical, and they would just like to quietly do their research work. And then they have to play the game that's being played, and you registrars are part of the game. You know, do not pass, exactly. Go and tell. So they have multiple priorities. Now, notice this. If they're going to be booming successes, they have to find time away from their classes, their meetings, to keep up with their field, to design their research, and they often have an interpersonal strategy to not be bothered. They look busy, preoccupied. Where are they? You can't even find them. Isn't that interesting? It's during their dedicated time that they carve out of what everybody else wants for them that they are successful. And of course, they're competing with everybody for resources. We said what? Grants, publication, the best, yep, laboratories, the best, yep, staff members. And you know, it's the loudest ones who get what they want.
That
I
has
think
been
I
my
should
experience.
Add in here. Oh, good. Good, good, good. So some registrars may not know about the ICR. So if a faculty member gets a big grant or any grant, 50 to 60% of that comes right off the top, indirect cost return, ICR. And that more than half will go for the administration, the buildings, and all of that. And the faculty member can do her research with the rest of that money, including hiring staff. So those staff are on soft money, as we say, and sometimes the faculty members kind of act like they own that staff. They've hired them, and they wouldn't have a job without them. Whoa, I think I'm saying a lot here. They are task and thinking. Yeah, I love your laughter. They are task and thinking oriented. As a matter of fact, I like to think of them as heady rather than interpersonally oriented. Now, of course, this is generalization, doesn't apply to everyone. Yep. Staff like it when I read this description from the Myers-Briggs type indicator. The heading is called the scientist. They're sometimes called brilliant masterminds. And I'm not saying that registrars are not brilliant masterminds.
Thank you.
But these scientists, they have preferences and a clear vision of future possibilities and the drive and organization to implement their ideas. Big thinkers. They love complex challenges and readily synthesize complicated theoretical and abstract matters. They're intellectual. Their global thinking leads them to develop visionary goals and a broad brush plan for achieving these goals. They value knowledge and expect competence of themselves and others. They especially abhor confusion, inefficiency, and, dare I say, administration. They critically, this is part of the scientific method, and of course, they're not all scientists. They critically analyze, question, and challenge everything before they accept it. So if you have a new policy or some timeline, they're going to question it. They don't necessarily think they need to accept that. They don't accept the null hypothesis in their research. They prefer working alone because they believe that others are only going to slow them down. They have perfectionist tendencies. They're intensely private, not interested in the social realm particularly. And here's a hard part. They can be sarcastic and judgmental. They have very little respect for colleagues they believe are incompetent or irrelevant. So I'm saying a lot here, Doug.
Yeah, I'm picking up on a number of common themes, and I think this idea of the driven intellectual who has this incentive structure of publish, get grants out there on their own, I can see that factoring into ways that we as registrars interact with them. And so we joke about it a lot and refer to the faculty like there's some kind of an alien species. But faculty are people, highly intellectual, competitive, driven ones, and registrars are people. So I hope that we can bridge some of that us versus them approach with our conversation today. And so I think that necessitates a particular mindset when we approach faculty or want to work with faculty. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about that mindset that a registrar or an administrator needs to take on when they're addressing faculty or reaching out to faculty or working with faculty.
I'd be delighted to. And I think it might be useful to talk about tenure just a moment, because
some people
don't understand how that works. Tenure is an employment contract in higher education for the exceptionally productive faculty members. And this is the publisher parish, be outstanding in your field. It's a lifetime guarantee for employment at that university. They can't be fired unless they do something terrible, illegal. And I think there are two main reasons that faculty want tenure. One is academic freedom. They can teach pretty much what they want to, explore controversial topics. They're not going to have to be worried about the politics because they can't be fired. The second reason is that many of them could, of course, make more money in the industry, but here they have lifetime employment. They can work on what they want. They'll have students, graduate students, postdocs, whatever, to help them specialize. So not everyone gets tenure, of course, but most of them were trained in graduate schools, and the culture comes out of the graduate schools where they're all competing and working on other faculty members' publications and research. So we all know there's variations among the faculty and many different kinds of colleges and universities, some public, some private, some tier one research universities with their engineering, medical, law schools, that are lots of four-year state and public universities, some of them liberal arts. They have tenure, too, for their faculty, and a bigger teaching load, more focus on education, and the two-year community college is a big part of our thing. So I'd be happy to go here to mindsets.
Yeah, that I appreciate the diversion back to tenure, because that is helpful to understand sort of that end goal for many young faculty members and what's driving them, where are they trying to get to, helps us understand some of their actions. So yes, now we're back to what mindset should we adopt when we're working with faculty?
Okay, so I'll talk about the faculty mindset. And the great divide between faculty and administrators and staff is built into the system. The reward systems are dramatically different. The populations of faculty and staff are somewhat different. And the faculty have dearly held principles and a mindset. And I have 6 points going very quickly. Faculty are focused on their individual achievements and success. And they actually believe, this is an overgeneralization, that the accomplishments and skills of the individual faculty members are the fundamental assets of the organization. Now, to them, administration and management is less valued than academic achievement. They assume that implementation is the easy part. They often think they could just do your job very easily. Isn't that kind of interesting? That means that they see you as support staff. They see you as making the university go round so they can do their individual work.
And in a way, they're not wrong. I just want them to understand the complexity of what that means from a registrar perspective. I mean, I am here to make the university run.
I see you registrars as focused on the organizational success, the organizational systems, on the whole student. You're interested in enrollment, retention, remedial work for students. Faculty members often don't see that as their job. You see education as a larger process, and you would assume that everybody works together to provide education and research, and everybody ought to follow policies and procedures. So you are team players. Faculty members are rewarded for being solo performers. Now, a couple of other assumptions. Faculty own the curriculum. They know what students need and should learn. Now, this is pretty interesting. There was a big drive about 25 years ago for faculty to be customer focused. I was teaching customer service on big universities to the staff, and the faculty said, no way. We are experts. They are not our customers. They are our students. We know what they should learn, and we will provide that. Okay, point number four, they value competence and confidence, and they will work with anybody who helps them. They don't necessarily work with the chain of command. And often they really think that they should be able to teach what they want, when they want it, in whichever classroom they prefer. Have you ever had that experience?
No. All of the faculty members at all of my institutions have quietly and appreciatively taught whenever and wherever we have assigned them.
Uh-huh.
I wish. So,
well, let me just make the transitional point here, that your five universities where you've worked had the best faculty they can get. If they hired faculty to work well with registrars, they'd have a whole different population.
Yeah. I think that's true.
Some of the characteristics that make faculty members big stars also make them rather difficult to work with, rather dismissive and demanding and critical of staff. Okay, that's a lot.
That's a good foundation for where we're going with the rest of this episode. So, mindset from the registrar perspective, what do we need to do to work with faculty? How do we make this an effective working relationship? That's where we're going with the rest.
Yeah. And maybe we should just say, giving you full credit for your people skills, your emotional intelligence, and your ability to navigate the system and to communicate to the faculty that you really get who they are and what they need and how busy they are. And when you do that, they often come around rather nicely. The first issue everywhere I go at every level is, how do you get them to respond to you? Yes. Deadlines and timing are a huge issue.
Yes, agreed.
Okay. Now, here are six little suggestions for registrars, and they may or may not fit every college or university. But right up front, I would suggest that in faculty orientation, that the registrars, the administrators, the deans help the faculty to be student-focused and to see that the organizational systems are there for them and for everybody else. Okay. I had the experience of being an adjunct at one point. I was hired by a chair. I never got word one about grading, the catalog, the new course, any of that. So, of course, you registrars are working with adjuncts and part-time people, instructors, and they need an orientation to the self-service portal right up front, to the registrar's office systems. I would have a place for the registrar in new chair orientations. Up front, help them to be more organizational people and to understand how they can translate what they teach into what students and you need. And of course, that means the website, easy access, easy navigation.
Yep.
Second idea is forming relationships with key faculty members, chairs, assistant chairs, any way you can. My sense is that registrars has visibility as important part of the leadership team.
In most cases, that's true.
The more they know, is it? Yeah.
In most cases, yeah.
I think of registrars as part of the decision-making process of the organization and working closely with a number of vice presidents and dean. I don't know how often you can get into a faculty senate meeting or go to the faculty centers where they are or be on interdisciplinary committees. But I think it's good for you to have a high profile with the faculty if you can. Does that make sense?
It totally does. And I have participated as a non-voting member of Faculty Senate in a number of places. And I strongly recommend, just even if you're not on the, this is for my gentle listeners who are registrars, to go to Faculty Senate meetings, be seen at Faculty Senate meetings. After about the third Faculty Senate meeting I attended at my previous institution, I wasn't required to be there. They didn't expect me to be there. But once they saw that I was there on a regular basis, they started asking me questions as part of the meeting. And me being able to give them answers or to say, hey, you know, that's a great question. I'll take that back and, you know, work with the executive committee to get an answer back to the full faculty senate. So just being present provided an opportunity to get to know faculty members better and for them to see the expertise that the registrar brings to the institution. So totally agree with that suggestion of being present, raising the visibility of the role, and getting out and meeting and greeting faculty members where they are.
My third point is to anticipate the faculty needs, prepare early, when and how to use the system, submit information. They cherry pick their email, so use the subject line. Some faculty members seem to like the information and the schedule posted in the lounges. The lab managers tell me the best place to post faculty information is in the bathrooms. What do I know? There are often particular managers in a big department who work with the adjuncts and the part-time people, and you want to know who they are, of course. If you have unresponsive faculty members, I suggest you assume they're strongly introverted, they're preoccupied, they're lacking confidence, and so approach them that you want to give them some information, collaborate to help them make it successful. Let's just add in here a little about policy enforcement.
Yes, please.
So this is where you set the collaborative tone. There's a principle that may or may not apply, and that is we want to deliver faculty members and people in general good news in writing, but deliver bad news in person. Isn't that interesting? So they might rather have a phone call or a visit. And, you know, if you have people who are posting grades for the whole class or leaving papers in a pile for people to pick up, they need a conversation.
Yes. Agreed.
If they're not meeting the deadlines, peer pressure can help. And it's interesting, they'll probably pay more attention to the chair or the dean than they will to you.
Yes. And that's another part of the relationship building piece, is it's really important to know who the associate deans are in the schools and to have good lines of communication with them, but also with the chairs, the department chairs, or the local academic unit directors. And the deans need to know who the registrar is, so that when we're not getting responses from individual faculty or we're not getting responses from a chair of a department and we need a response, and you know, that's not always the case. I would not escalate to the dean of the school if someone is late with their grades. That happens. But there are situations where I will need to reach out to the dean to say, hey, I really need this from this faculty member. Would you mind following up? So that's, again, like working those relationships early and often.
Well, and of course, it's kind of confusing for everybody because the chairs in many of your schools rotate every 5 years or so.
Sometimes more frequently,
and you've got a new person in there. 3 years sometimes, right? So it would be good for you to call and congratulate the new chair and tell him or her how to work with you.
Yep, that is a great idea.
Okay, two other ideas that I think are so obvious. You're going to be working with their administrative assistants, their department coordinators. Those folks know whether a faculty member would prefer a text or an email or even a phone call. They know their schedules and office hours. And I have heard the most amazing things at what people do to get in touch with faculty members. And I don't expect registrars to be doing this, but at Stanford, the IT department couldn't reach a very famous faculty member. And they finally, after emails and phone calls, made his telephone look like it was the Nobel Committee calling. And he picked up the phone right away.
For the record, listeners, I cannot condone the idea of spoofing a phone number or email address, but that is awesome.
Okay. And the last one, of course, is to streamline your systems to make it less painful. And I am shocked across the country about how the faculty complain about access to the internet. They don't want to go online to report their travel. They're confused by how to report their grades or whatever. Oh, I'm a little concerned about stereotyping these faculty members. And this is what I hear most about because they're the ones that create some hard work for people.
Right. And again, I think, you know, referencing back that about 86%, maybe more, of our faculty members submit their grades on time. Those are people who might be challenging or difficult to work with in other regards, but who have a respect for the policies and practices in place. And so it's really just that, you know, what is that, 14%, 20, it's not 24%, it's 14%,
yeah.
Right? So we're talking about a small number of what would be considered difficult faculty members, right?
Overall. That's right. And most of them, yeah, most faculty members are congenial, they're compliant, and there are some who are very difficult, and we know who they are, and they're going to be difficult to anybody, and they can do it because they're tenured, their behavior might not be acceptable on the staff side of the house or in a corporation. Yeah. Yep.
So you referenced it just a moment ago. How do we make faculty members' lives easier? You said streamlining some of the systems. Sometimes that's possible. Sometimes that's not possible using delivered or vendor sourced applications.
Sure.
But what are ways that we can, as registrars, make faculty's lives easier?
Well, having that mindset is a huge help. Everywhere I go, there are professional staff members who look faculty straight across. They know that their roles are important and what they're asking faculty are legitimate, and they want to help faculty be successful, and they're respected because faculty appreciate competence and confidence. So there's a certain professional approach. And then when it comes to verbal communication, very important to be direct, brief, data-driven, and non-emotional. So that's the first one.
You can't see me, but I'm nodding to these.
Okay, yeah. And then you have your established system. So the best you can get, if you could anticipate their needs where it might be confusing, where somebody's for the first time proposing a new course, there's some confusion about graduation or whatever you might be, you would head them off at the pass, tell them early. Like, here's an example. Get the faculty and the chairs to refer parents who are inquiring about their kids' academic performance to the registrar's office.
Yes.
And then you don't have to clean that up. You might have more to say about that.
That's one of the things that we try and reinforce with faculty all the time is don't talk to the parent. Send them to the registrar's office. The faculty member isn't, they've taken FERPA training, but they're not FERPA versed. And the faculty often see that as a real interruption of their work and not their responsibility. And they are correct. It is not the faculty member's responsibility to talk to a student's family.
Some customer service principles, huh? Say what you can't do, avoid saying what they can't do, because people don't like to be told what they can't do. Provide the next step and be aware that you're managing their experience with the registrar's office every time you have an interaction, and it's not just completing the transaction, but building the relationship. Something called the third point of contact. If someone needs to know a policy, you might refer to the policy. If I have staff who are standing in front of a faculty member, I'd say put it on a clipboard in 14-point type, but you might say where it is on the internet or whatever. And then they get mad at that policy, not so much at you. You're pointing to the procedure.
Right.
I suggest that if somebody calls to complain, listen fully. And they may have to tell you on and on in an emotional way, but listen, understand, paraphrase their feelings. It's pretty likely that it's user error anyway, but they need to be heard. Maybe there's a way you could tweak the system or learn how to avoid that up front.
Yep.
Okay, this is a long shot. I am so impressed with some universities that develop a whole culture where everyone is student focused and they're really helping the students be successful. Lehigh University is a good example of that. They have principles of community. They have a staff faculty committee of faculty members who called ERAC, can't remember what that means, that works on improving staff-faculty relations and goes to the faculty with what the staff want. Also, in universities where there are robust organizations of staff members. So, for instance, UCSF has ABOG, Administrative Business Officers Group, and there, like nowhere else I've been, the managers work with each other. They're a cohesive group. They learn from each other. They have conferences, and they're more confident, and it changes the culture of the whole place. UC Davis has an interesting principles of community. It represents the university values. So it's a one-page written document, 14-point type, and every 2 years, they take that document and all the president, the provost, the deans, the administrators sign that in the margins, and then they post it in every single classroom. So what happens is that when people are not compliant, when people are difficult, they can say, we have our principles of community. We need to help each other be successful. And in some ways, this is an antidote to faculty might think there's nothing in my reward system to help registrars have an easy job, be successful. But you want a culture of collaboration, mutual respect. I think that's part of working the systems.
Yep, I agree. And the more that we can focus that around this idea of understanding the student experience, trying to enhance the student experience, thinking of things from the student perspective, that gives everybody sort of a common focus for how we build that culture at each institution. So I think that that's a really good anchor point for kind of bringing that into focus. I've said focus 3 times. Focus.
Yeah, well said. Bravo. Bravo.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we are coming up toward the end of our time, and I'm interested to know if there are other things in particular that administrative staff, specifically registrars, might be doing or ways that we might conduct outreach or any other tips or tricks that might be helpful for us to hear.
I think as managers, some of you are very large staff who work with faculty. We hear everywhere that faculty are likely to pass somebody in the hall and not say hello or not learn people's names, or the staff say they do 100 things right and 2 things wrong, and what do they hear about? I'd like to suggest that you orient and coach and train your staff to understand faculty who have a different focus, priorities, their academics, help them understand faculty, have reasonable expectations, to grow a little bit of a thick skin, And then don't make exceptions. The staff hate it when you make exceptions. They've said no. You make an exception, and other people expect that exception, and the staff members feel like a jerk. Staff members want you to have their back. So, in summary, faculty are academics. They learned their culture in graduate school. They have a very different background, outlook, methods, and culture. The university has the best faculty that it can get. I have great respect, understanding, and compassion for faculty. I'm not making them look bad, at least from my point of view. I think we need to understand, especially their reward system, that the best thing they can do for the university is often go work quietly alone and get famous. You folks are organizational people, team players. You make the university and the college go round.
Exactly. I really like faculty. When I started in the registrar's office, I was a degree audit coordinator, and my job was to go out to each of the departments and track down all of the requirements for all of the degree programs at the university so we could code them into the system. And there, I won't say the name of the school where that happened, but there wasn't a lot of oversight or governance involved. And so there was a lot of wishy-washiness in the way that the requirements were presented officially. And so having to have those conversations with individual faculty members, you really get a sense of their passion, their drive, and their range of expertise. It's a wonderful place to be, higher education, because you're surrounded not only by all of these students who are here and excited and, you know, they're focused on learning, but on all of these subject matter experts, hundreds of them at any time. You can bump into somebody and talk about, you know, 13th century German poetry or the latest development in nanobots. So, and I'd hate to have the conversation about nanobots who are writing 13th century German poetry, but that could happen. Somebody's there. It's the next interdisciplinary study. So I really like faculty members. And I do think that as the registrar, faculty are one of our constituents. And we as registrars need to understand where they're coming from so that, as you pointed out a couple of times, anticipate their needs. If we can make things easier on them, if we can adopt that mindset of understanding where they're coming from, everything works better. Everybody's happier. And that's really the goal.
Yes, well said. And you, as leaders of the organization, can help everyone work to have a collaborative culture, a respectful culture. I have huge respect. These men and women are pushing back the frontiers of knowledge. They're hard workers. They love what they do, and they loved having you come sit down and have them tell you about their work. What a treat.
Yeah, for me too. Dr. Christie, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your expertise. There's a link to the book on the show notes page. So if you're interested, and also to Dr. Christie's website on the show notes page. Thank you again to Dr. Susan Christie for joining us today to talk about ways to approach faculty and, most importantly, the mindset to adopt when dealing with faculty in order to work with them effectively. Faculty are one of the key constituents for any registrar's office. And as a service office, we need to work diligently to make sure their needs as a group are being met, all without sacrificing the role we play as registrars at the institution. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. And if you are, why not send a link to your colleagues? Be sure to join the mailing list from the ACRO website so you never miss an episode. Until next time, I'm Doug McKenna, and this is For the Record.